Good morning, honorable members. Ban of the sitting room, Kumela TV.
Okay.
Morning, honorable members.
Good morning,
Morning, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
How are you?
Fine, how are you, Chair?
Fine, and you, Chair?
I'm good, ma. Good morning, Commissioner, Chair, and Deputy Chair, and all your commissioners.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chair.
Wuhande.
Good day.
I am good and with you.
With you.
I am good, I'm good.
I'm good, Chair.
Yes, ma. I declare this meeting officially open. Honorable members.
Recording in progress.
You are all welcome. And you are welcome, Chairperson and Deputy Chair with your Commissioner.
Thank you.
Only that I want to read something that is very important regarding your deployment to provinces as Commissioners. I was approached by the leadership of the Northern Cape and the leadership of Limpopo they are saying they don't see commissioners in Northern Cape and Limpopo, Chairperson. So I promised them that I will come back to them and give them feedback on who are your commissioners that are deployed in the two provinces. They said to me, there is a provincial office in the Northern Cape. There's only staff, they don't hear of any of your commissioners deployed in the Northern Cape. In Limpopo, the same, but they are faced with many challenges like the Northern Cape, but they don't get joy from your commissioners. If maybe you can clarify in all provinces. I know for the fact that Mama Zibuko is deployed in the Western Cape because last week I spoke to her and I wanted Mama Zibuko to meet with Honorable Kaula, because there were issues that were raised to myself as the chair and issues that were raised to Mam Kaula also. So I thought that because Mam Kaula was in Cape Town, we'll meet with Commissioner Mazibuko in the Cape Town. But I think due to there were sittings of parliament, and remember, when we are in Cape Town, buses are leaving at 8 and 12:30. So if you miss those two buses, it will mean you'll have to book your own transport. And transport is very expensive in Cape Town. So I hope Mama Zibuko will rearrange with Mam Kaula so that she try and assist those families who wrote to the chair the problems that they are facing. But also, I don't know who is deployed in Gauteng, because there are two cases that I forwarded to the chairperson and the deputy chair, which I'm sure, Chair, you'll give me feedback on what progress have you made in regarding the cases that I forwarded to you. And honorable members, they know most. I think even KZN, we remember we had the families that were affected by floods. So we went there as a portfolio committee, and there were interventions that we made when we were there as the portfolio committee. But there is still an outcry of some of the families that haven't been allocated houses. And some of them are still fighting for accommodation, where they've mixed them with some families that are having a male dominated, and abanye abantu, they've got girl children. So they are scared, which abantwana babo, they might be violated. So I think CGE must take this matter again with the provincial government of KZN. And maybe you need to do a oversight visit. Go to the municipality and the provincial government, meet with them, and see how best can you assist with regards to those families, because I don't think it is correct for them to be left in the wilderness where no one is taking care of them. Because I think most of the families that are affected are families that are coming from poor backgrounds. So they do need your intervention as much as you can assist them. So I thought that let me raise these issues. They are important, honorable members. Mpumalanga, can you also share with us to see who is replacing honorable Commissioner Trobatla? Because, you know, it was one province that was getting attention with the deployment of Commissioner Trobatla. So, and we don't want the Mpumalanga to lag or to be behind, because there were a lot of things and interventions that we have made also when we did our oversight visit in Mpumalanga, with the reports that were submitted by Commissioner Trobatla. And unfortunately, because she was part of our oversight visit, we were able to make a provincial government to account on the issues that were made. NYDA was also there, and it was easy for us for NYDA to also make their interventions on the spot. So we don't want to lose that energy, because there's a lot of good work. There's a good story to tell about the work that has been done by the late Commissioner Trobatla in Mpumalanga with her assistance. One shelter, Tutuzela Center, it was in one of the hospitals. I think it's Rob Ferreira, if I'm not mistaken. The NPA, the CEO, and the Department of Social Development And I think SAPS, they were able to make interventions. Yeah, but in that in Mpumalanga. So I thought that these are the critical issues that I want to raise in my opening remarks, honorable members and commissioners, so that at least we get a response before we go to the two reports that you need to present to the portfolio committee. Over to you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable commissioners. I hope my honorable members, sorry, I hope my commissioners will actually come in where I have left some facts due to not having prepared for this issue. We have got all the provinces with commissioners. In the Free State, we've got Commissioner Mutupi. Western Cape, as you have mentioned, it's Commissioner Mazibuko. Eastern Cape, it's Commissioner...
Chair, I think the other complaint was from the Free State. The leadership of Free State was also complaining about Free State. So if I can just, we can just get clarity on what exactly is going on and who are the commissioners that are deployed. Because previously it was you, Chair, who was deployed in Free State.
Yes, yes, Chair.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, Eastern Free State is Mutupi, Eastern Cape is Commissioner Van der Merwe, and Northern Cape is Commissioner Kumede, Gauteng is Commissioner Ngoma Diseko, and Limpopo it was Commissioner Day, who is currently serving her period, notice period up to the 24th of March. And then in Northwest is Commissioner Ngomani. We do have backup commissioners in all the provinces, but due to the challenges that we're having about backup commissioners being called on to do the actual work, we actually decided that backup commissioners should stand back and come in only in the case of an emergency where a commissioner cannot go and an appointment has already been done, etc. So those are the commissioners. Or there's also KwaZulu-Natal, which is allocated to Commissioner Naidu. So Limpopo, I think rightfully there is a complaint because it was neglected. Commissioner Day went sometime in September, October, between the 18th and 22nd of September, if I'm not mistaken, or 18th and 22nd of October, somewhere there. I'm open to correction. I don't have any information in front of me. And before then, yes, there was that gap. And after that, there has been that gap up to the point where on the 25th of January, during our plenary, she tendered her resignation. Since then, work has been going on, but it has been work that is being done by the teams, the team in that province. And I know it's quite an able team led by Mr. Tsepang Mokgokong, but there hasn't been a commissioner. 2 weeks or so ago, we allocated Commissioner Gumede to go there and assist. And I know Commissioner Gumede has been there. So if she could give a report, because we have not met or spoken since she went last week, I think it was the 28th, yes, on the 28th of February, she went up to Limpopo. And then in the Free State, Commissioner Mutupi has done some work, and I would like Commissioner Mutupi to come in here and assist, and also Commissioner Gumede. But before, in the Northern Cape, but before I allow Commissioner Gumede to come in with regards to Northern Cape, I need to explain that there was a challenge with regards to the deployed commissioner, there being Commissioner Kumede, and the PM in terms of certain tensions about the work. And we have got a formal complaint that we are dealing with. We met on the 4th, I think, of February. 24th or so of February to try and resolve that matter. The complaint was lodged sometime in July. Again, I'm open to correction. And since then, we did clarify that work is going to continue as normal. Commissioner Kumede can clarify there, although I know that the visits have not been or very few at all.
You are talking about Northern Cape.
Northern Cape, yes.
Let me ask you, Chair, is it true that there was a fight in the Northern Cape?
There was no fight, there was a misunderstanding.
Okay, between who and who?
It was the commissioner deployed there, Commissioner Kumede, and the provincial manager, Ms. Thembelihle Bokwana.
Okay, I think the best thing, let me give you a opportunity to write a full report, because that's something that they have raised with me. And I was found wanting, because I've never heard of that. Don't know, one of the commissioners was fighting with the staff, but I was not sure what are they talking about. Yeah. So if maybe you can give us a brief report, about, not today, just go back and see how you can give us a report, because I was like, I couldn't mind that. Yeah, but because I never heard you giving us any negative reports about Northern Cape. So when the leadership was talking to me, I was like, what are they talking about? I was a little bit confused. So just to summarize, what transpired, so that we could picture of what was going on. And then what happened after that? So now, are things running smooth or what? In KZN, I'm told, Naidu is doing work, but Naidu must also attend to the issue of floods. Okay, we can continue, Chair.
Yes, Chair. We will write that report. And then if Commissioner Kumede could, in the meantime, just clarify via me if she has been to Limpopo as per arrangement on the 28th. That was supposed to be her first visit to go and meet the team and familiarize herself whilst we are sorting out Northern Cape. As I say, Chair, it's only last weekend we have not been able to meet and get a briefing and debriefing from her about that visit. The rest of the
where
problem...
we are visible, Chair, where we are visible, they said it's Eastern Cape, Northwest, Eastern Province, yeah, KZN, Naidu is visible. It's only that they complained about Ntoyama Fulan. I need to give you a feedback. What are they saying? What is the leadership saying?
Yes.
Gauteng, Anginiboni, Gauteng, Gauteng.
I don't see a Gauteng and I stay there in Gauteng.
Yes, Chair. I think what I will do, Chair, is to actually write a full report about where all the commissioners have been in their provinces during this period, just so that it's more detailed, because I do not have a prepared report now and I don't want to skimp on details. I will prepare a report if you can give us a deadline, just so that even the commissioners themselves assist. I do know that some provinces, there has been a lot of work being done, and there is mainly a lot of work being done by commissioners. I'll submit a full report.
Whoever is deployed in the Free State, they were outstanding matters in the Free State. Your commissioner that is deployed in the Free State must give us a full or a comprehensive report regarding outstanding matters. Chair, taking into the work that we have done and the issues that honorable members have raised in the portfolio committee regarding Free State issues. So if you can do that for us, maybe let's hear who is deployed in Mpumalanga, and then what happened with Limpopo, and then just give us a brief, ne? Not detail. Just give us a brief.
Okay. Now, Che. A brief now, Che, or as part of the report.
You go to Limpopo because they say you are not visible.
The first person to go after a long time was Commissioner Kumede last week. And again, I'm open to correction because I do not know if she did actually go.
Nia, in Northern Cape.
No,
did you go to Northern Cape?
A commission.
Now, was the last one to be there.
Waiting for the finalization of this process so that we deploy a permanent commissioner there after the new commissioners come. But in the meantime, the office of the chair is actually in communication with the province in terms of whatever support they need. And thankfully, in that province, there's a very senior provincial manager, and so far all has been well. We worked with her very closely to secure our offices. As you know, that we did not have offices there for a long time. Now Mpumalanga has got offices. So we are monitoring that closely. Even the office of the CEO is actually working very closely with them. So Mpumalanga is in solid hands, although, Chair, I must acknowledge, like you're saying, the person who was on the ground and was Commissioner Dlouba-Tla in terms of commissioner involvement, and she was very active.
Ani, Lama Province. So,
this is true that you don't go there.
Some provinces, for example, I know.
When I read something in a meeting, honorable members, they know, but when I read something in the meeting, it means I have a detailed information about each and every province. Because
you can't just ask a question without the issues being raised to me. I've counted the provinces. KZN told me that Commissioner Naidu.
And Kamampela, she does do work, but we want her to see with how best can she assist to those families who were affected by floods. Commissioner Knight is in the meeting, right?
Yes, Chair. She is here, and so is Commissioner Gumede, if she could clarify the trip of the 28th.
The commissioner deployed there is helping, assisting with the cases. They have programs.
Eastern Cape, although Ufaner Merve will need her among villages where aided are being raped by young boys, so that we can see what how best can ECGE help working with the police and Justice Department. I think Commissioner Van der Merwe understand what I'm talking about in the Eastern Cape. It's here in the meeting.
Yes, she is here, and so are all the other commissioners, Chair. Chair,
but
can
but they say they know her. She's doing work there. So please go write a report, your quarterly report on the work that you have done so far, so that next week we'll find a way, as much as we'll be busy with the interviews, we'll find a date, a day where we're going to allow you to give us your reports.
The person presents himself or herself. The presentation. Individuals are given an
opportunity about the work that commissioners are doing in their respective provinces. So we'll give you a time so that a city. Well, then it's all.
Who don't say, what did you do yesterday? And who was the name?
I raised these things with yourselves. You will go back, compile your reports so that we are able to deal with them next week. Is it okay?
Yes, Chair. That's in order.
Okay. Thank you very much. Nelly, let's take apologies. Honorable Masiko, she's not feeling well, but she's part of the meeting, but she's not well. Can we have Ama report? Apologies, Nelly.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson, and to members of the Commission for Gender Equality. Chair, I have not received any apology for today's meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, we just have got one apology. Commissioner Lee van der Merwe will be leaving the meeting maybe before we finish, because she is part of an oversight visit in the Eastern Cape somewhere that she is leading. So she has joined, and when they are ready to go into the premises, she will actually leave us. But she is on a CGE duty.
Okay.
She is. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Mama Zibuko Wanayagwaz, Western Cape PI.
Mama Zibuko, I know you're in the Western Cape.
Okay, over to you. Mama Zibuko Kwanaya. Meeting.
Nothing possible around in the meeting.
Chair corner.
I'm here, Chairperson.
Yeah, but Chair.
Oh, okay.
Chairperson.
All right. All right, Chairperson, you can take over now.
Thank you very much, Chair. To be specific, Commissioner Van der Merwe is at the Doran Ginsa Hospital that we are monitoring. Thank you, Chair.
Yes,
that's where she is.
I know that hospital.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have got two reports as per the request of the committee. Commissioner, our acting CEO, Dr. Dennis Matotoka, will lead us. With Dr. Matotoka, Chair, we've got Ms. Naledi Silvano, who is the acting head of research. So whatever questions that come with regards to methodology or any other additional information, she will be able to help Dr. Matotoka respond to the questions. Thanks. Dr. Matotoka, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, as well as members of Parliament, as well as my commissioners and colleagues with me here. The report that I'll be presenting, Chairperson, is on a pregnancy that play a school dropout of adolescent girls during pregnancy in the postpartum period in selected South African provinces. As you know, Chairperson, we have a very vibrant research unit in the Commission for Gender Equality. One of its mandates is to course research or to conduct research on areas that border around gender equality. Now, this is an area that in the financial year we thought it would be prudent that we conduct a research around this course as well. So the presentation, Chairperson, in view of time, I'll skip the mandate. I'll briefly talk about the introduction, the legislative framework, the aims and objectives of the study, the research method and methodology, the ethical consideration. I'll club them into a single overall opening remarks. And then my colleague here will then quickly go into the findings of the study and also dealing with the recommendations thereof. What, Chairperson, the question is, what really prompted the CGE to conduct this study? We conducted this study, Chairperson, because only a third of the adolescent girls that become pregnant in South Africa return to school, with each year that passes after giving birth decreases the chances of them ever returning to school. Chairperson, research that we looked into also shows that pregnancy is one of the causes of school disruption, and at a particular level, the secondary school level, and that in many cases, the birth of a baby marks the end of schooling for adolescent mothers. Now, as the CGE, we felt prudent, Chairperson, that we conduct this study to make meaningful contribution to the body of knowledge relating to the factors that influence pregnant learners and adolescent mothers not to return to school after giving birth, and also to make policy recommendations as well as fulfill our constitutional mandate. Now, even doing so, Chairperson, we are governed or we consider a number of instruments, both regionally, locally, and internationally. And all these instruments, Chairperson, they talk about the right to education. They talk about the need to put the necessary safeguards to prevent unfair discrimination against women on the basis of their gender or even pregnancy. So what is reflecting on slide 5 is just so some of the international instruments that we have relied on, your CEDAW, your Beijing Platform for Action, your International Convent on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, as well as the Maputo Protocol. At the national level as well, we have now looked into the Constitution, particularly because it's one of the instruments that guarantees the right to basic education. And we look at PEPFUTA as well. And we looked at the South African Schools Act, and the national policy on the prevention and management of learner pregnancy. Now, in considering all these instruments, we wanted to understand to what extent are these instruments effective in ensuring that learner pregnancies and the factors that are leading to school dropouts are addressed. So we looked at all those instruments as a guiding yardstick. Now, Chairperson, the study that we are presenting here, Chairperson, is aimed to investigate the reasons for school dropout by adolescent girls during pregnancy in the postpartum period. The study explores social, cultural, legislative, and economic factors that pose as barriers to school attendance by adolescent girls during pregnancy. And the objectives were to investigate these factors that prohibit adolescent girls from returning to school during pregnancy and the postpartum period, and to further explore the effectiveness of current institutional, legislative, and other efforts to protect and promote the right to education and non-discrimination of pregnant learners and adolescent mothers. Now, we did that, Chairperson, because one of the things that we realized is if we don't conduct the study, there might be discriminatory practices that are there in society. We are also looking at the long-term effects of this school dropout from even an economic point of view. It means you're going to have a large number of adolescent mothers who in future will not be able to participate in the mainstream of the economy. And of course, it therefore means systematically they will continue to be at lower levels even in the workplace. Now, in terms of this research, Chairperson, we have relied on the qualitative research methodology that enabled the researchers to have a deeper understanding of people's behaviors, knowledge, and views and subjective experiences. Chairperson, the population sample during the qualitative research methodology was informed by selecting three different provinces, and that included the KZN, Limpopo, and the Eastern Cape. The reason is, Chairperson, the stats essay indicated that about 83,000 children between the age of 10 and 17 gave birth countrywide during the financial year 2019 and 2020. And KZN recorded about 18,550 births, while 13,129 births were recorded in Limpopo and 12,671 were in Eastern Cape. So we focused largely on those provinces. But the factors that lead to school dropout differ from one province to another. In some instances, it's based on gender, and there are other factors that also contribute towards that. 13.4% of female learners drop out of school due to family commitments, which includes getting married, minding children, and pregnancy. Now, in terms of the sampling, the inclusion and exclusion criteria of the adolescents, the study had sampled about 24 adolescent girls, 33 key informants, thus making 57 participants in total. The participant has to be between the age of 10 and 19 at the time of their participation in the study. The participant must have dropped out of school while pregnant or after giving birth. The participants must have dropped out of school temporarily or permanently during due to pregnancy or childbirth. The participants must have dropped out of school for at least 6 months to offer the deep insights to enrich the study. The adolescents with a known history of mental illness were excluded, as their participation in the study could have prompted an increase in or return of symptoms. The adolescents with a history of domestic or dating violence, rape or sexual abuse were also excluded. So that is the criteria that we used to determine who should form part of the study. And we did that, Chairperson, so that we can provide an understanding as to why there are these numbers in this study, because we know when it comes to teenage pregnancy or the dropout, there are different dimensions to the study. One can say, but why not looking at those are over the age of 18? Why not looking at 34-year-olds and so forth? But for the purpose of this study, we use this criteria so that we can have a deeper understanding of the challenges between these adolescent children between the age of 10 and 19. Now, in terms of the key informants, we have engaged the senior officials from the National Department of Education, school principals, which were four, educators were eight, members of the SGB, which were 10, and members of the school management teams, which were 8, and learner support agents, which were 3. We conducted face-to-face interviews with the participants as a method that we relied on to collect the data. The interviews with the National Department of Basic Education were also conducted. However, this was done virtually. The interviews were tape recorded and permission was indeed sought from the participants, and instances of minor children, the parents and guardians were engaged so that consent can be provided. Now, of course, because now we also deal with minor children, we know that from a research point of view, you need to ensure that you comply with the ethics. So from the study, we ensured that there's informed consent, especially for minor children. Then the participation was not cajoled, it was voluntarily. And we also ensure that the issue of confidentiality is adhered to without mentioning places or schools where we engage the participants. So of course, the issue of anonymity we also adhered to, and ensuring that our study is actually going to be transformative and not necessarily causing harm. Of course, Chairperson, we had some complaints when we were conducting this study. We've experienced some delays from the Department of Basic Education in terms of their participation, and largely because this was a sensitive study that we're dealing with. And if you look at the age group that was involved, we had to somehow expect a delayed participation even from some of the participants. But we also experienced challenges with the Department of Limpopo, a Department of Basic Education, because they were not cooperative and responsive to us when we needed to conduct the necessary interviews. And this was done notwithstanding the number of communication that we sent to their side. So as a way of background, this is what happened, the criteria, the background, the instruments, and the basis of us conducting this research study. So what will follow now, Chairperson, is the actual findings of the study, which I'll hand over to my capable colleague who will deal with the findings from the study. Alice?
Okay. Thank you, CEO. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members of the Committee, the Chairperson of the CGE and the Commissioners, as well as my colleagues that I'm with here. I will be taking the committee through the overview of key findings. So what the report does, it does delve deeply into the findings for each province. But what I'm providing here today is just a summary. As Dr. Matotoka indicated, the study was conducted in the 3 provinces with the highest levels of teenage pregnancy at the time. The numbers do vary, they do change because the scenario keeps changing. But at the time, these were the provinces. I also wanted to indicate that while the study did seek to look into factors leading to school dropout due to pregnancy or having given birth, by nature of our method of data collection, which was a semi-structured interviews, you allow the participant to take control of the interview. You only come in to probe or give direction here and there. And we could not resist because the adolescents we spoke to had to speak about factors that led to the actual pregnancy taking effect. And we did explore these and featured them in our report. This is not the exhaustive list. There are many others. We always say that this part of the report must be read complementarily with other findings that speak to factors that lead to adolescent pregnancy. Our study revealed that factors that lead to adolescent pregnancy are multiple and dynamic. In other words, there was no single factor that we can attribute to adolescent pregnancy. And in terms of the factors, we identified that there were issues around knowledge, access, and use of contraception services. Amongst our participants, some did have some form of knowledge on the various types of adolescents of contraceptives that are available, but also displayed very little understanding of how they work. And the most common types that were known to the participants of the study were the contraceptive injection. They also had some form of knowledge around the contraceptive pills, as well as the contraceptive implants. But it is worth noting for us that prior to falling pregnant, none of the adolescents in our study had utilized any of these. In addition to the limited knowledge of contraceptives and how they work, there was also some form of reluctance to take them up. And this was linked to the biological misconceptions or myths around the side effects of contraceptives, such as the belief that they make your body wobbly or that they will permanently lead to infertility. And usually this was the case without fully exploring the wide array of contraceptives available, as well as having a thorough knowledge on them. Participants expressed the fear of being stigmatized, and this was a preconceived notion, and it was because of the friends that they had who had already accessed the facilities and reported that they were discriminated by the healthcare providers. So this influenced the fear for them and served as a factor that prevented them from accessing the services. Adolescents feared using contraceptives that were provided through the mobile health clinics in the schools. They rather preferred the fast lane contraceptive option that were offered at the local clinics, and this was mainly in the Eastern Cape province. So the challenge with the mobile health clinics is that they were in the school premises. And this was the initiative by the Department of Health to try and bring the services closer to the schools. However, the adolescents would fear being seen because they feared that they would be stigmatized or be seen as though they are engaging in sexual activities. And this was normally shunned upon in their school communities. The fast lane service, on the other hand, was offered in the primary health care services, meaning in the clinics. And what it meant is that once a learner presents to a school in their school uniform, they would have to skip the queue. So they preferred this better compared to the services that are in the schools. And I must also note that in the Eastern Cape, the mobile health clinics, the service was halted because parents did not like them. They felt that by introducing the services in the schools, this would ignite early sexual debut. So the Department of Health had to withdraw the services given that they were underutilized. I'm now moving on to another factor, which was on the minimum or lack of parent involvement. And in terms of this factor, the findings revealed that the topic of sex was taboo in some of the households. Parents would sometimes take up an approach which would only focus on abstinence. So when the topic of sex was covered, it was to encourage the adolescents to abstain from sex. And it was usually done through a moralistic injunction, meaning through the Bible or religion. Some of the learners came from child-headed households and some single female-headed households, wherein their parents were migrant workers. They had to leave the areas in which they resided and had to go work in the city. So what their parents would do, they would then rent accommodation closer to the school for their adolescents. And what we learned was that as a finding, this gave the adolescents an opportunity to explore their curiosity around sex with no supervision. There were socioeconomic factors also that were revealed by the study. And a number of adolescents came from disadvantaged backgrounds. And there was always that fear that when they fell pregnant, they were worsening their economic situation. Some of the young girls engaged in sex with older partners for survival reasons. And the controversially and unproven view that adolescents fall pregnant as a means to access the child support grant or the child care grant also came through. But this was mainly from our key informants and not from the adolescents themselves. So some of the principals or the educators we spoke to would say that they felt that the learners fell pregnant because they wanted to access their child care grant as a means of survival. Another factor that we explored was on statutory rape, older sex partners, as well as teacher-scholar sexual relations. A notable provision of the National Policy on the Prevention and Management of Learner Pregnancy, which was approved by Cabinet in 2021, places an obligation for educators to report any pregnancy of children under the age of 16 with a male person older than the age of 16 to the South African Police Services. There was, however, a challenge of secrecy when it came to the identity of the father. And this was mainly due to threats that would be imposed to the young girl by the older sex partner, or from the pressure from the family to conceal their identity because it's a family member and they would not want to be seen or be laughed at in public or be ridiculed by the society. So there were pressures that the adolescents felt, and as a result, they did not reveal the identity of the perpetrator. And again, there was a danger that we found associated with the avoidance of sex talk in the family, in that when parents do not talk about sex or dating, it laid fertile ground for older men to play on and begin sexual relationships in secret with their adolescents, because this family would not be explored in the household. So as a result, these relationships would go on in secret. There were also reports of teachers engaging sexually with learners. Substance abuse was also another factor that we came across. And some of the schools did allude to the fact that alcohol consumption among young learners was a challenge, with one of the key informants saying the following, I quote, "They also drink alcohol and it's concerning because when they are drunk, they can be taken advantage of easily," I close quote. I also wanted to emphasize that the emphasis now is mainly on the adolescent girls because this was the focus of the study, but it must be noted that these are not the only factors. There are other factors, including the fact that older men take advantage, and that's another factor that must be explored in detail in research. However, right now it would seem like we are blaming or casting too much spotlight on the adolescent girls. This is mainly because of the main objective of the study. It does not mean that adolescent girls are the only ones to point a finger at. But in this junction, we learned that they were consuming substances, including alcohol. The school groundsmen would also report that they would find learners drinking and smoking marijuana in school premises. And now moving on to factors that led to withdrawal from school. So this is where our research tended to focus mainly on, given that this was the main objective of the study. The interviews revealed that there were individual factors, and these are factors that speak to the adolescent's own self-esteem or motivation, and these play the role in determining the prospects of learners being retained in schools as a result of falling pregnant or having children. And one of our participants said the following, I quote, "To be honest, with my pregnancy, my family offered me a lot of support. It's just me. I was not confident. That time I was doing my trick," and I close quote. So what this illustrates is that even though she had support from the family, she did not feel confident enough to return to school. So this were one of the individual factors that we uncovered. Because of school interruptions due to ill health and the time taken for maternity leave, some adolescent girls experienced discouragement from continuing with their education. And this is also because of the lack of support sometimes that is provided. So when learners take a lot of time away from school, they don't feel confident to be reintegrated back into the system and do well. And so some do not feel psychologically prepared or adequately prepared to go back to school amidst the challenges of having to adjust to having a baby or having fallen pregnant and still do well and thrive in their academics. So what that would do is that would it would lead to adolescents dropping out of school. There were household factors that we uncovered, and we learned that the adolescent mother's financial status, if it does not allow for them to afford a childminder or creche, or in situations whereby there are disabilities with the baby, then this would lead to the adolescents falling, dropping out of school. And this is because they would not have anyone to assist them in looking after their child or their children. And there were instances where educators even revealed to us as researchers that they would sometimes have to beg parents to please make a plan to find somebody to take care of the baby so that the mother could return to school, but they were not always successful. And it must also be noted that there was inadequate support from the paternal families, meaning that the fathers of these children were not present. So the care role and the role to provide for their child or the baby would squarely lie on the shoulders of the adolescent as well as her family. And if they do not have the resources, this would mean that the adolescent would have to sacrifice their learning and take care of the baby. There were school-related factors, and we noted that there was a lack of academic and psychosocial support being provided in the schools. There were no remedial or catch-up classes, so if learners who were pregnant had to miss out on school because they were not feeling well, some reported that their legs would swell or they would experience vomiting and other challenges associated with pregnancy. But unfortunately, when they would come back to the school, there would be no support. There was one adolescent we spoke to who had dropped out while she was in matric, and she said she was told to not attend the school camp because she was pregnant, and because the teachers wouldn't know how to assist her if she had an emergency situation. And when other learners came back from the camp, there were no initiatives to help her to catch up. And she felt that she wasn't prepared. That's why she had dropped out of school. And that's just one of the examples of how when there are no remedial or catch-up lessons, learners fall behind and therefore decide that they will not cope and therefore drop out of school. In terms of psychological as well as psychosocial support, there were schools that had learner support agents. We did confirm with the National Department of Basic Education that these services were not widely available, or rather available at all the schools that are state-funded. And also the challenge was that the learner support agents were not professional psychologists or social workers. They were individuals who possessed just a matric certificate. So their role was just to identify problem areas or challenges with learners and then refer these cases to psychologists and social workers in the community. But the services of social workers and psychologists are already limited. So that meant that those psychosocial situations or challenges would be left unattended, especially with the caseloads that social workers would complain about. As part of the study, we also looked into the knowledge of relevant legislation and policies on the handling of learner pregnancy, as well as the retention of learners in schools. And mainly here, we focused on the officials in the schools, the principals, educators, and so forth, to test their knowledge on the current measures in place and to also understand what measures were they utilizing to ensure that learners come back to school and complete their education. Knowledge in this area was limited. And we also noted that it was also because the policy, the national policy on the prevention and management of learner pregnancy, the comprehensive measure that we have in the country, had only recently been approved. So the Department of Education noted that they had not rolled out training or capacity on the utilization of this measure across all the schools in all the provinces. So they had no knowledge of this, but this shows then that for the longest time, there were gaps in the system. In the Eastern Cape specifically, we learned that schools had their own pregnancy strategies or practices, and many deviated from the measures that were approved by Cabinet in 2021. And one of these was that at 7 months pregnant, learners had to be accompanied to school daily by a guardian or a parent, as well as a caretaker. And this was because there was fear by school officials that should there be any pregnancy-related complications, school officials wouldn't know how to manage the situation. And I must also emphasize that the challenge with this was that it was even commercialized. There were areas where somebody would then come to the family of a pregnant learner to say, can I offer the services of becoming a caretaker for your child so that you can continue with whatever income generating project? And then you would have to pay me such and such a fee. But it must be noted that some of the families were poor. And so that would mean you are taking away from the family's limited resources. But it was utilized as an income generation project for some of the unemployed community members who would then see that there's a pregnant learner and want to take advantage of that situation. So we did inquire about why these practices were being put in place. And schools said in the past, especially in the Eastern Cape, that they had had situations whereby learners would go into labor in the school premises. And they felt that they were not trained, so then the responsibility should fall onto the guardian or parent. The officials also expressed uneasiness about utilizing their own vehicles to transport learners to healthcare facilities. And again, it was because they didn't want to be blamed if anything goes wrong. There were issues around cell phone coverage in the areas, especially in the rural areas, as well as in situations of load shedding. So school officials felt that they would not be in the position to call for help. That's why they would want the guardians or parents to come and take care of their own children, so that when there are emergencies, they would have to handle them. There were also reports of clinics that are not well equipped to deal with childbirth, and the hospitals in some areas were too far, and ambulances sometimes took too long to reach the schools. So school officials said they were not equipped or felt inadequately prepared to deal with pregnancies and childbirth, and hence they adopted again that practice of learners bringing their own parents or guardians to school. It must be noted, however, that these measures were in direct contradiction of the national policy on the prevention and management of learner pregnancy, because what the policy intends to do is to create an enabling environment which would encompass support being provided by the schools, learners reporting at a specific time frame that they would be due at this point in time for labor, so that the school can have the necessary measures in place to provide support. But unfortunately, that was not the case in these schools. So in conclusion, and the conclusion covers the entire report, we conclude as the CGE that clearly the long-standing issues of inadequate and distorted knowledge, as well as poor and inconsistent uptake of contraceptives among adolescents, is still a challenge in the country, or at least in the provinces that we visited. We further concluded that alongside various forms of support, parental involvement as well as support were key in the prevention of adolescent pregnancy, as well as in the reintegration of pregnant girls and young mothers back in school. And this is because of that finding that because sex was not a topic, then learners wouldn't know how to handle the situation, or also when the learners could not even reveal to their parents who the perpetrator was. But also the socioeconomic circumstances of the family played a key role in whether learners returned to school or not, because it was a key finding, and it cut across all the provinces, that because of not having enough resources to pay somebody to take care of the baby, adolescents would not return to school. We also conclude that the practices employed in the management of learner pregnancies across the schools were incoherent and were staggered. And this was despite government's introduction of a national measure that would ensure that there's consistency across the board. And finally, we concluded that efforts to provide training, capacity building, and policy awareness by the Department of Basic Education were fragmented, resulting in inconsistencies in the application of the policy among the provinces. And I'm now moving over to the recommendations of the study. Because the study revealed that adolescent pregnancies as a result of numerous intersectional factors that ranged from limited parental involvement in the provision of comprehensive sexual and reproductive health education, fragmented sex education provided by the schools, because this was a finding, we just didn't delve too much into it because it was mainly prevalent in one of the provinces, but in some of the schools we learned that sex education was also fragmented in the schools through the syllabus. There was also poor access to contraceptive services. We also noted that intergenerational as well as teacher-learner sexual relations were still a case, as well as issues of substance abuse, religious and cultural beliefs and other factors. We therefore said, because this is a wide array of issues, they necessitate a comprehensive approach that incorporates awareness raising among parents, educators, and broader communities about the importance of open communication about sexual and reproductive health and related services, the provision of comprehensive sexual and reproductive health care services by adequately trained healthcare providers, strict law enforcement against teachers involved in sexual relations with learners and in cases of statutory rape, and educational programs against the use and abuse of substances by children. We recommended that the Department of Basic Education, the Department of Health, as well as the Department of Social Development and the South African Police Services spearhead community-based as well as school-based programs to tackle these areas. Moving on again with the recommendations, the study unearthed findings that indicated that pregnant learners and adolescent mothers were in need of financial support. And therefore, we recommended that further studies must be undertaken to unpack in detail the specific economic needs of pregnant learners and adolescent mothers that lead to withdrawal from school. And we said additional studies will contribute to clear and specific recommendations in light of the kind of support needed to be drawn and brought to the attention of relevant government departments, as well as state agencies, such as the Department of Social Development and the South African Social Security Agency, which is SASSA. I think we learned yesterday in the news that there was a study commissioned by this that looked into the financial needs of pregnant mothers. And I think this speaks to what we are asking for as well, that a study that must be undertaken must clearly solicit or unearth research findings that would tell us and quantify what kind of financial support is needed by adolescent mothers. The study raised concern over the stigma that learners faced in the school environment that was perpetrated by both educators and learners. And we say that the negative remarks and attitudes displayed induced low self-esteem as well as inferiority complexes leading to school dropout. And as the CGE, we recommended that schools create a positive learning environment by adopting values of empathy, non-judgmental attitudes, as well as provide emotional support. And this is the last slide on recommendations. We said, despite South Africa establishing an enabling policy environment to retain pregnant learners and adolescent mothers in school, policy prescripts were not fully known, understood, or applied seamlessly across the provinces. And therefore, we recommended that the national and provincial departments of education or basic education roll out advocacy and awareness initiatives to support and strengthen the application of the prescripts of the national policy on the prevention and management of learner pregnancy across all schools in all the provinces. And we said that these initiatives must target all parties involved in the school structures, or rather all the stakeholders involved. Finally, the findings of the study indicated that pregnancy-related ailments and the additional care roles of motherhood led to poor academic outcomes, serving as a barrier to the retention of pregnant learners and adolescent mothers in schools. And therefore, we recommended that the application of the National Policy on the Prevention and Management of Learner Pregnancy be accompanied by programs that will create academic support for learners who are pregnant as well as those who are mothers already in the form of catch-up initiatives as well as remedial education. And we recommended that the Department of Basic Education must take up this initiative with the support of civil society organizations. Thank you, CEO. That is the end.
Thank you, Chairperson. That is the presentation from Secretariat regarding the learner pregnancy report from our side. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That was the first report. Thanks.
Maybe let's allow you to present the second report so that when we ask you questions as CGE, we do both reports. Yeah, just let's present the second report.
Thanks, Chair. Over to you, Dr. Matatuk.
Thank you, Chairperson. So the second presentation would be the CG's assessment of the government's implementation of the NSP on GBVF between 2020 and 2020 and 2022. I'll ask my colleague to then take us through that as well. Ellen?
Thank you, CEO. Okay, thank you, CEO. The next presentation is the one we titled Missing Pieces of the Puzzle, and it was on CGE's assessment of the government's implementation of the NSP on gender-based violence and femicide between the years 2020 and 2022. The report was released in 2023. If you allow me, CEO, I will skip the CGE mandate and rather focus on the objectives of the study. The purpose of this study was to review the implementation of the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide by the South African government and other state-funded entities between the financial years 2020-2021. And 2021-2022, which were the first 2 years of the NSP implementation since it was formally adopted in April 2020. And the NSP is one of the outcomes of the Presidential Summit Declaration that emanates from the November 2018 Presidential Summit on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. I'll give a little bit of a background on the NSP. It provides a multi-sectoral, coherent, strategic policy and programming framework to strengthen a coordinated national response to the scourge of GBVF by the government of South Africa, as well as the country as a whole. The strategy in itself has a life cycle of 10 years, from 2020 to 2030. However, it's got a medium target that were between the years 2020 and 2024. The strategy was developed through comprehensive consultation, and it was a process led by the interim steering committee, which was established by the summit declaration. The interim steering committee itself comprised of various stakeholders, including government departments, members of civil society organizations. There were developed academics as well as other role players. In terms of our methodology, we aimed to monitor and review the implementation of the LSP on GBV by the South African government, as well as other state-funded entities. So what that means is that there was an exclusion of civil society organizations. And this was mainly just to limit the scope with our capacity in the unit so that we can fully complete the project by the end of the financial year. The plan was that in the next phase, we will include the full scope of stakeholders in the study. The project had a timeline of 12 months, and data was gathered from government departments as well as other state-funded entities through written submissions to the CGE. As the CGE, we had written to these institutions based on their responsibilities in line with the implementation of the six pillars of the NST. And then we gathered responses from them, which we analyzed and prepared to write the report. We also utilized desktop research methods by looking into official sources such as departmental reports, annual planning documents, as well as other published and unpublished documents. This study was also prone to a number of limitations like any other research study. Firstly, we relied heavily on the cooperation of the many lead and support government departments that were tasked with various responsibilities in the six pillars of the NSP. And it was unfortunate that we received a very limited number of responses from government departments who were in possession of the data that was needed for us to compile this report. Secondly, some government departments that responded to the CGE's request took longer than expected to send the information, while some did not give us the information that we needed or provided scanty information that was inconsistent with the objectives. Most of the NSP targets were supposed to be achieved between the 2020 and 2024 period, and we did not have a clear plan in terms of the NSP regarding the yearly targets. So the targets that were in the document were ranging between 2020 and 2024, making it a little bit difficult to track by every year how much work has been done or how much ground has been covered. So as an example, a target would say it must be implemented anytime between 2020 and 2024. So that's not a clear plan, but what we did was to assess if there's any progress achieved in the interim. There were, however, those targets that were targeted for the two-year period, meaning that by 2021, or 2022, they were supposed to have already been achieved. And that made it easy for us to track progress in that regard. Just as a broad overview of the findings, this is how it looked like. We focused on pillar one to pillar six. So the first column focuses on targets falling between 2020 and 2022. These are targets that are clearly indicated in the NSP that by 2022 they must have been achieved. And with regards to those, we noted that 11 were achieved and that 5 were not yet achieved. In terms of progress on the implementation of other targets, we noted progress for 72 targets and that there was no progress on 18 targets, meaning there was stagnation, nothing had been done around work on that specific target. And then we also have a column for no performance information, and this is where we did not get any responses from the entities or even in information that is available in the public domain. There was nothing being reported. as well as government's own report around implementation and tracking progress. This information was also not available in their report, and those were 38 targets. In total, we're tracking progress on the achievement of 144 targets. I think this is just a summary of what I have spoken to, so I will skip that and go to the specific pillars. Under pillar one on accountability, coordination and leadership, our findings demonstrated that the National Council on Gender-Based Violence, as the accountability, coordination and leadership structure, was not yet established during the first 2 years of the rollout of the implementation of the NSP. And this was mainly due to delays in the promulgation of the legislation that gives power to its existence, or rather authority to its existence. The delay in the establishment of the structure therefore hampered progress on a number of indicators, particularly where the structure itself or the NCGBV was indicated or assigned as the lead role on the implementation of those targets. We also noted that the non-existence of the National Council on the Gender-Based Violence and Femicide also created an institutional vacuum on the overall oversight and monitoring of the NSP, given the gaps in the data as well as information on the implementation of...
Interrupt. Chair. Chair.
Yebo, Mam Khawula.
Thank you very much, Chair. Ngixolisa inkosi yami ukudisturba.
Apologies for disturbing, interrupting the presenter. I'm just worried and frustrated. I want to put it clear. Because you are sitting in this committee, I'm complaining, I'm crying. If we say we have committees representing women and children that are being abused, it worries me a lot if I find that there are people who are still suffering, especially with the cases that have been tabled and no follow-up has been done, as I did last week. In Unit 20, Phoenix, there is a person who has stayed for 23 years. He has directed the church and he feeds the offense. The deputy minister in women's settlement knows that place. All the departments have been there. CGE is from there. As I'm speaking, I'm sending the photos. They are being evicted with all these kids. What is the use for us to sit in this committee if these people down on the ground, all the issues that we're dealing with, the problem that we see, then there's no solution. The high courts are not helping us, but they're working with the criminals. And the subs are there. They are just destroying households there. My question is, what is that you are sitting for here? I've sent you the photos. I'm sorry to disturb you. By this problem, CGE knows this. The minister released these people. People are being abused in the farms. They are crying and complaining. What must they do? What must women do, as well as children? Because to be free, you have to have a house. They are going to be littering in the streets. I'm Kaula. I'm accepting your apology.
Now, and then
let's stop this. And then allow them to finish with their reports. Nelisa will make. Create a visual meeting.
between the chair and CJA and you yourself and deal with this issue so that you don't disturb the meeting. Let's allow the meeting to go on. And
so that we can discuss this case, Mam Kaula Kulmangai. But Manje, we need to continue and focus to this meeting.
Thanks, my love. Thanks.
Sorry, presenter, for that interjection. You can continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. All in all, the performance assessment under Pillar 1 revealed that even though there had been some advancement to achieve some of the targets, there were still other areas of shortcoming. In terms of Pillar 2, on prevention and rebuilding social cohesion, we noted that strides had been made on several areas. Particularly on the development of the comprehensive national GBVF prevention strategy. I thought I should emphasize, Chair, that our study looked at the outcome and not the impact of the strategy. We were assessing just whether the various targets were achieved, as in the tasks and activities, but not whether there's been an impact overall in society due to the NSP. We're noting that that activity can happen at a later stage. That's why the report right now focuses more on the activities and not the overall impact of the strategy. We also noted that the strategy on prevention of gender-based violence and femicide emphasizes the value of policy and evidence in driving an evidence-informed gender-based violence and femicide prevention strategy of the country. We also noted progress in other areas, such as the development of the National Integrated Prevention Strategy Against Femicide. There was also the approval of the policy framework to address gender-based violence in post-school education and training system. And there were also communication interventions that were implemented. However, notwithstanding the fact that there was no information on some of the areas, as well as areas where there was no progress noted at all. In terms of Pillar 3 on protection, safety and justice, progress on the development of respective legislations was noted over the first 2 years of the rolling out of the NSP. We noted that there was the amendment of Chapter 6 of the Criminal Law, which is the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2007, the overhaul of the Criminal Procedures Act of 1977, there was
recording
the amendment
stopped.
Of Relations Act, the finalization of the traditional courts bill.
Recording in progress.
The inclusion of cyber violence in the cyber crimes bill, which were all before Parliament for promulgation at the end of the review period. We also noted that there were quite a number of strides made in this pillar, mainly due to the work of the Department of Justice and as well as the South African Police Services. However, what we noted as a challenge was the deadlock in terms of DNA cases, which related to issues of gender-based violence or cases of gender-based violence within this review period. On Pillar 4 regarding response care and support as well as healing, key activities under this pillar were mainly under the mandate and leadership of the Department of Social Development. We could not note any progress on any indicators associated with the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. As indicated, it had not been established. And this then led to a number of setbacks in the implementation of the key areas under this pillar. we noted that there was progress around the passing of the Victim Support Services Bill. We also noted that there was progress regarding ensuring that government departments have employee wellness programs that offer psychosocial services. However, indicators were quite numerous under this pillar that we did not note any progress on. And examples are the municipal plans on care support, including the service map and referrals, and as well as on issues of GBV programs with social workers being institutionalized across the levels of schooling, meaning primary and higher education, in order to provide a safe and a caring environment. So overall, there were areas of progress, but others where there was no progress noted at all. In Pillar 5, which is centered on addressing women's economic marginalization, as it is noted that a lack of economic independence leads to entrapping women in abusive relationships, as well as prohibits them from reporting violence when it occurs. What we noted under this pillar is that there were key interventions, many of which included gender-sensitive budgeting, accelerating initiatives to address women's unequal economic and social positioning, making workplaces safe and violence-free, as well as strategic policy interventions by the state, private sector, and other key actors. So these are some of the key provisions under this pillar. We noted that there was no significant progress across the board in terms of the implementation of targets under this pillar. Where we noted positive steps, it was mainly on soft indicators, such as plans being in place to introduce income generation programs. And this would be for women who are perhaps in shelters or women who have experienced gender-based violence. And there were then difficulties proven in achieving difficult targets or long-term strategic targets, such as the establishment of the land and the fund, Honorable Chairperson, interventions related to unpaid care work and the development of the Gender Inequality Index. Strategies in this pillar do recognize the clear link between gender-based violence and femicide and economic dependence, and therefore seek to ensure that obstacles to women and their vulnerabilities or their positions in the economy are effectively addressed. So it's a strength, but it was not realized mainly under the implementation of this pillar. And on the last pillar around research and information systems, we noted that from the various indicators under this pillar, there was notable progress made in the reporting period, meaning the 2 years, the two first years of implementation. We noted that there was progress in the national GBV prevalence study, which is being undertaken by the Human Research Council. And we noted that it was an important progress to note in a situation whereby the country is currently battling with data on gender-based violence and femicide. And we noted that this study in particular will provide crucial information regarding how widespread the challenge is within provinces, whether the issues are escalating, as well as the scale of gender-based violence. And that we said the study will greatly assist then in the coordination between justice and crime sectors on their interventions in fighting the scourge of GBVF. We also noted that this particular study will assist in having a good baseline as well as the database from which to work in coordinating activities more systematically based on evidence. So this was the key or notable area of progress, the study being undertaken by the HSRC. In conclusion, we concluded that while there was an indication of progress made towards achieving some of the NSP indicators, there were also several instances where progress could not be assessed due to lack of performance data. The lack of data undermined the objectives of the study, which was mainly to give an overall impression on the strides made by the country on whether we are making progress or whether progress is slow, advanced, or completely lacking insofar as the implementation of the NSP in the first 2 years of rollout. We also concluded from this report...
Hello. Presenter.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson.
You see, I have a problem with what you just said now. That one of the reasons that you couldn't... What's that now? I have a problem with what we have just presented in terms of the lack of data. In my understanding,
please close your mic.
When you say lack of data, I was going to understand if maybe in terms of the implementation of the NSP, you would have assessed an performance of all role-playing departments so that when you present to the portfolio committee, as a committee, we get a clear picture in the research that you have done on how have you analyzed the performance of role-playing departments in implementing the NSP. Because if they don't give you data, there's nothing stopping you from analyzing and assessing their own performance. So we get a picture on whether role-playing departments are implementing NSP or not implementing NSP. And that was going to make life easy for us as the portfolio committee. Because based on the research that you have done, on what we have, on your findings, we're able to summon all those role-playing departments based on the information that you would have given us as a CGE and use it to make them to account. Because it will be a true reflection, and it was going to be evidence that we'll have to hold them accountable on their performance. But yeah, when you say there's lack of data, then for me, that is not assisting us as a committee. Isn't it when you do research, you are the one who must get data, get you must have your own findings and analyze your findings and make recommendations on what you have done based on your findings. So the recommendations that you are going to give us now will be lacking some information. also that's also going to make life difficult for us, whether to hold a department of women, youth and persons with disability accountable or not, because we have read this report. And some of the information that you have already given to us, we can see which department is lacking. But we're hoping that your report was going to give us all those details. I just thought maybe let me interject you and erase what I'm saying now. Maybe if you can respond to what I've just said, that can help the committee.
Okay. Thank you, CEO. Honorable Chairperson, yes, I do note your concern. It's a legitimate concern. It's one we've been grappling with, I think, in the institution generally, on the lack of cooperation by government departments. And this is an issue that is being addressed. The CEO has called myself and other HODs in the institution to say it cannot be the case going forward. Can even make a case regarding when we were in Limpopo presenting one of our reports and the Department of Basic Education did not cooperate. What they tried to do was to offer an apology. And he said sternly that apology is not accepted and that the CGE will utilize its powers, its legislative mandate to ensure that that is dealt with and that going forward, departments cooperate with us. I can say, Chair, that you are correct. There are a number of areas where we did get cooperation. And there was on the high number of targets. It was only the 38 where there was no performance information. And performance information is not necessarily that a department did not cooperate in some instances. Sometimes even the same department would give us information, but on that specific target may not report at all. And this information would also not be in existence in other published documents or other secondary sources of data, because we also looked into those. We did not only rely on the reports by the departments. We also took an initiative upon ourselves to look for information. And these are only the areas where there was no information, but not that there was no information at all. So what gave us confidence to go ahead with analyzing the rest of the data and publishing the report was because the overwhelming majority of targets we did have information on and we were able to draw conclusions. But we do note your concern, Honorable Chair. It is a legitimate concern. It cuts across many of our reports, and I think it's something that CEO has been emphasizing to us, including the chairperson, that going forward, we will not accept this behavior. But I'll then give it back to the CEO to see if he wants to emphasize certain areas or maybe add on to my response. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Naledi. Chairperson, I think my colleague captured it well. Suffice to say that one of the things that we are busy with as management is to promote synergy between departments so that the work of the research unit can somehow also inform the public education campaigns and the work that of the research department where there has been non-cooperative conduct from a department or a private sector, that information should come to legal, and then legal should therefore use its Section 12 4B processes to ensure that those that are not cooperating, they come to the CGE and come on account. So historically, we had that challenge wherein we did not have a clearly defined synergy between the department, but we've agreed and step of the chairperson as well to cooperation, we are unable to conclude certain things in our report. So going forward, And this is actually what we are currently doing, in fact, where research is not getting cooperation. We have started a process where we now use our powers and then we say they must come in account. So it's an area that is currently receiving attention from our side as management. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much, SCO.
Thank you, Chair. I will proceed. So another conclusion drawn from the report was that the delay in establishing the multi-sectoral national coordinating structure on gender-based violence and femicide has served as a major setback in the country's attempt to strengthen accountability and architecture to address gender-based violence and femicide adequately. We know that there are challenges in the setup of the National Council, but we note also with concern that it has served as a major setback, particularly because this is a structure that has been earmarked in the NSP document itself as a structure that will coordinate, lead, and monitor the implementation of the NSP. We also concluded that effective operational coordination is necessary among institutions assigned the lead role, as well as those assigned the support role on the same indicators to avoid fragmentation, as well as to strengthen accountability among key institutions working towards the same goal. So this speaks to the area wherein in the NSP, there are institutions that are allocated the role to become the lead and others to support. There was no coordination in their work or the work being undertaken. So we are noting that it is a concern because you'd find that in one area or in one pillar, other departments are doing very well while others are not. And yet if there was clear coordination, that wouldn't be the case. Our recommendations are brief. We recommended that the process of establishing the NCGBVF should be fast-tracked as the effective implementation of the NSP appears to be largely dependent on it. The findings demonstrate that while there has been achievement on several areas of the NSP implementation, the NSP costing had not been completed at the time. It was therefore unclear how it was being funded. And we also uncovered in our review that there were weak and ineffective coordination mechanisms among the lead and support entities assigned to the various key activities and indicators of the NSP. And as a result, we recommended that lead entities must play an effective role in ensuring coordination and accountability in the implementation of key activities where they were assigned. And that brings me to the end of my presentation, CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. That is the work of the research department as far as this report is concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO. Honorable members, here are the two reports presented before the Control Committee. Can I also get hands from honorable members? You know, there's one question that I will be consistent in asking in terms of, yes, you have done your research and and these reports, remember, they are not for 2024. But our interest also is it's progress made by the relevant institutions, whether it's departments. But we have interest in hearing from you that. After you have done your research and you have made recommendations, do you share with the relevant stakeholders your findings? And if you share with them, or you didn't share with them, how will they implement your recommendations if you didn't share your reports with them? Because I think that is critical. For instance, we have engaged with, have you engaged with the Minister of Basic Education and the Department of Social Development, including the police, with regards to your findings? And based on the reports that we are presenting today, do you have any plan or plans for the coming in administration, the seventh administration, regarding the work that we have done so far? Because I think it's important. I think that some of the questions that I'm asking, we have already asked them with the first report that you presented last week in the portfolio committee. Clearly, looking at your report, I have noted a poor performance by the Department of Women, and remember, the Department of Women is the custodian of the implementation of the NSP. So that's what I've noted, and when I was going through your reports. So I think in one of the meetings, in our meetings, not your meetings, in our meetings, we'll have then to ask the Department of Women to account on how far have they gone in monitoring implementation of NSP by all role-playing departments. Honorable members, you must also remind me. It's either we write a question to the Department of Women, raise things that we see in this report, and maybe in terms of their own mandates in doing monitoring and evaluation, to the role-playing departments, going to the TPV, what is it that they have done? So that we put a day aside, invite the Department of Women and all role-playing departments to come and account to the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, honorable members. Let me get hands from honorable members. Honorable Opperman, Honorable Masiko, Honorable Sengwa, Honorable Tembani, Honorable Sheriff. Yeah, in that order.
Can you put me, Chair?
Mamson.
Yes.
Okay, Mamson, you will be the last.
Thank you.
Okay, in that order, honorable members. Honorable Opperman.
Good morning, Chairperson and colleagues. Chair, my questions will be focused on the first presentation because the second one didn't have much data to formulate questions on. I'm going to switch off my video due to the network here in Acacia being unstable.
That's okay.
Chair, through you, I'd like to say if they cannot answer some of my questions, that they must please then in writing come back to me on some of it if they don't have the data at hand currently. I'd like to know with regard to the teenage pregnancies, how many of these girls or the cases was due to sexual assault or statutory rape. I want to know this because this year, on the 26th of January, the Department of Basic Education reported that 150,000 girls between the ages of 10 and 19 have become pregnant in the last fiscal year, that is 2022-2023. So I want to know how many of these girls was, the cases was due to sexual assault or statutory rape during their study. And then I want to know, are they cross-checking with basic education? Because basic education is that form 22 that deals with teenage pregnancies. Are they cross-checking that? And how many learners are then referred to DSD or a social worker? Then I'd like to know, Chairperson, how are we addressing the issues of transsexual sex? Because I heard in the report they refer to girls having sex for money, and how are they addressing the issues of sugar daddies? And I also heard they said it was reported that girls are having children just for the sake of the child care grant. That is very alarming, Chairperson, and I'd like to know how are they addressing the issues of GBV then, and the result of their findings through the study on sugar daddies, transsexual sex, rape, and GBV. Then I want to know, regarding to it being now mandatory for the educators to report to SAPS on teenagers in the school 10 to 16, who is then investigating and reporting on who is responsible for impregnating children as young as 10 years old? Because it still is statutory rape, but there remains this big silence and vacuum. I want to know who is heading the investigations and who is reporting to whom on who is responsible for impregnating children. And then I want to know, in this study, did you also cross-check for HIV prevalence during the study? Because I think it was silent on that, because it's also reported that a lot of our young girls, especially, are HIV. Their status is as high as any other sector of our democracy. Then I want to know, Chairperson, for the purpose of the study, are you keeping a record of how many, if any, of the girls returned back to school after the study? And then with regards to the national policy on the prevention and management of learner pregnancy, you did speak about the transport and stuff. So is it true that schools must transport the learners in labor, especially when there is no clinics available in the cases of emergencies? And who then will be held liable or blamed should something go wrong while trying to assist a pregnant learner? Thank you, Chairperson.
If I may, thank you, Honorable Offerman. If I may ask CGE, in your own recommendations, don't you think that maybe it's important for you to make a recommendation that will say to basic education, each school should have a social worker? Than burdening teachers with things that they have not studied for. Teachers, I think, in my view, teachers must focus on teaching and learning. Isn't it? But now, if teachers now will be given other responsibilities that are not in their job description, things that they have not studied for, why can't you make a recommendation to basic education minister or department to say they need to hire social workers in each and every school, who will be dealing with these cases? It's like, for me, teachers now are overloaded. Honorable Masiko.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and very good morning to your good self and all honorable members as well as CGE on the platform. Honorable Chair, I think one must appreciate the research reports that we have received firstly from CGE. I am covered on the first report on issues that Honorable Member Opperman has asked. But maybe just one question before I go to the second report, because mine is mainly on the second report, is around the issue of the assessment of the curriculum. Because if we speak about issues of teenage pregnancy at the tail end, it's important to also look into how the curriculum in terms of the life orientation would give support to the Department of Education to deal with the issue of teenage pregnancy as a preventative measure before it takes place. I know that in some findings, there is something that speaks about how the sex education is not done in other areas. But the understanding that we have is that the Department of Basic Education would have one curriculum across all the schools. What is taught in Umzimkhulu would be the same as something that is taught in Makado, Limpopo, for instance. So it is important to thoroughly assess the effectiveness of the curriculum. And also the issue, lastly, on this report of accountability, for me, it's important. If we would have more cases of arrest, because most of these teenagers are mostly impregnated, not only by teachers in school, but important figures within the communities who are older than 16 years of age. In other areas, we are hearing counselors which are impregnating young teenage girls. So the issue of accountability for me is quite important, and seeing actually arrests and people being accountable or held accountable for their actions. Chairperson, my focus really is on the second report, of which I want to totally agree with what you have raised, Honorable Chairperson, around the role of the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, of which as this portfolio committee, we must or ought to be playing oversight on. Firstly, I wish to put it, Honorable Chair, that I'm of the view that what CGE has performed on this research is something that the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities ought to be doing in terms of their specific role within the NSP, the role that the department is. It's not really one of implementation, but one of monitoring and evaluation. And it's something that, you know, these findings, because what we must agree is that obviously CGE will face limitations in terms of collection of data. They will get to certain departments, and the departments will actually ask that you are engaging me as who. But had this role been played thoroughly by the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities under their monitoring and evaluation unit, and also the secretariat that they have had in place, of which they presented to us the amount of money that is being spent by the secretariat themselves in performing or some responsibilities that are being highlighted here in this report. We wouldn't be sitting here, Honorable Chairperson, having such a report. So my question would be in line with what you have said around whether or not this report has been presented fully to the department, to the relevant government departments, yes. But for me specifically, the department of which we are playing or we have oversight responsibilities over. And the role also, has CGE been able to meet the secretariat now themselves that has an oversight role as well over the implementation of the NSP? but also not only met themselves, but have they actually looked into the responsibilities now given to the Secretariat, whether or not they are performing according to the NSP, what they ought to be performing. It's quite, a person for me, a problem, and it's also disappointing to learn that out of 114 indicators, there's only just a few indicators. Let me just go. 11 out of 144 targets in the NSP were achieved in the reporting period. Chairperson, we can't have anything close to that. We have a crisis of gender-based violence in the country. Government departments are getting away with, probably if we can say murder is an extreme, it is that. So I don't know, Chairperson, I am proposing, I know that there is a proposal that we must put it in writing to the department. We don't have time, I do understand. But for me, it would be quite a beneficial, Chairperson, to close off this term with some sort of accountability on the side of the department. We must invite them, we must invite CGE, and the department needs to account on their role that they are performing. They have a, you know, CGE has little human resources in terms of researchers, but they were able to perform this research. Department of Women has a monitoring and evaluation unit with warm bodies. What are they doing in relation to this? Because part of their mandate would be to do what CGE has done, you know, in such a short space of time. So for me, accountability, Chairperson, is quite important. And
in fact, it's their core business.
It is their core business, Chairperson. Mm. That's why I'm asking that we must bring them here in a meeting, because the writing will not help us. We need to engage them on what we are seeing, because we're not going to ask CGE why 11 targets have not been met. They can account for that. The accounting department through the Department of Women must account on this. You'd also be surprised, Chairperson, that some of them will not even be aware of what we are seeing currently. So we need to bring them in a meeting, Chairperson. I'm requesting through you that we find time in the limited time that we're having, even if it's in the evening or in the afternoon. For me, Chairperson, as a person serving or individual serving in this a portfolio committee, you know, as we close off the term, it would be nice to get some form of accountability from this department. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And I apologize if I've gone way beyond my time.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. Nelly, whilst we are still deliberating on this report, please check the date so that we are going to allocate one day and apply to the chair of chairs that we need to have an agent meeting with the Department of Women together with the CGE for them to account on the implementation of ENSP. We can't close drives before addressing this matter. Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. Mamtlengwa?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you, Chairperson, and honorable members. First of all, let me thank the presentation. It was so comprehensive and it was very interesting. And mine, Chairperson, is on Nena pregnant, but I concur with Honorable Masiko on what he's saying. Now I'm going to speak on Lena pregnancy. First of all, in terms of Lena pregnancy, what is the role of CGE in order to assist them or make them awareness before the Lena gets pregnant? Are there any awareness or teaching something or guidance of some sort? To is there any assistance provided by CGE in these learners or in these schools who have this learner pregnant? Lastly, what is the advice of the CGE to the schools or to the educators who have these learners so that these teachers has to be capacitated how to treat them, has to be assisted and to mold their mind to, because some of them, they don't meet, they ever meet this pregnancy in their own. And now they come across in the classroom with the learner pregnancy. Lastly, what is the their recommendations to the inspectors or whatever, and the principal, school principal, STP, what is their recommendations? Because at schools, there are stakeholders, which is SGPs, SMT, father, and second office. What is their advice so that they can all the communities get aware what they should do to prevent this learner pregnancy? Thank you, Chairperson.
Isn't it that the awareness campaigns and reaching out to communities in terms of awareness campaigns, that should also be done by Department of Health, not CGE specifically?
Yeah.
Because we need to separate things that CGE should is doing as an institution vis-a-vis that the service delivery vis-a-vis the service delivery departments. Maybe Tina Fanny, we must say have CGE engaged with the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Health on prevention measures regarding high rate of learner pregnancy, so that it must not look like CGE is responsible for service delivery, but at least they must be seen to be playing their part in terms of ensuring that there is justice to those who violate young girls sexually. Yeah, but and there is fairness in terms of the courts in dealing with some of the sexual others. Abanye bayareyithiwa ma abantwana ingane encane. So fane sizame ukuthi si separate ukuthi ezinye asezabo bona CGE, but umsebenzi we department yemaponisa.
We have to try and separate those duties. They don't belong to the CGE, but it is to be done by the Department of Police, Department of Justice, as well as the Department of Health specifically, because they are the ones who deal with these things. I'm just clearing.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings, Chair, and honourable members, and also the CGE. Chair, I don't think I'll be long. My first comment maybe is on the first report. I think firstly we must welcome the report. It does at least shed a light on the complexities that are surrounding adolescent pregnancy and school dropout. And it's focusing mainly in the three provinces as highlighted. And it does at least bring us into light in terms of the challenges that they are facing, the barriers to the contraceptive use, lack of police awareness, stakeholders and socioeconomic factors that lead to school dropout. I think my only issue with this part, Chair, would have been my concern on the sampling size, because the report does give us a huge numbers in terms of the dropout of the teenagers, but I'm very skeptical when we then only have a sample size of only 24 teenagers. And sorry, excuse my voice, I'm coming down with a bit of flu. A sample size of only 24 teenage participants and 27 key informants. In particular, with the province, the second province, Limpopo, in terms of the participation that we received today, I noted the fact that there was a bit of information not being given by the department, and I think also for me that gives me a bit of a worrisome. In as much as it only also focused on just those three provinces, I think maybe a snippet view in terms of what is happening in the other provinces could have just assisted in terms of us being able to have a holistic view in terms of what is happening regarding with the study that is being undertaken. So for me, Chair, I think that maybe an expanded sample size and a more holistic analysis of the challenges faced would have given us a bit of a stand in terms of being to make a thorough and a holistic overview, especially if we want to be in a position to develop targeted interventions and support systems. And on the second report, or on that one and the first report as well, I think also the timing that was taken in conducting the study was itself was a bit self-defeating, given the timing that everyone is concentrating on at the time is towards the examination. But I think the study did indicate that. On the second report, Chair, I think that I want to agree with your concerns when it comes to receiving a report that highlights a lack of data in terms of the report that we've been given. Well, I think it limits this portfolio committee in playing its oversight role. And we don't know the materiality of the information, of the data that is not included here, could have taken us in a different direction at this meeting. And in that, Chair, I think I fully supported the proposal by Honorable Masiko. That will be all, Chair, that I just wanted to raise. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tembani. Honorable Sharif.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members and the CGE. First, let me also welcome the report by the CGE. It's shocking if we look at the high amounts of teenage pregnancy, and it was only looking at three provinces. And I think I share the sentiments with fellow honorable members that, you know, when we have late reports, it makes it a little bit difficult for us as the portfolio committee to take on these issues and hold the people who need to be held accountable to account. My first question is, what is currently the progress on the recommendations that the CGE has made? It is shocking to see that a policy was agreed to in 2021 and, 3 years later, we're still having issues around understanding and in some cases people even knowing about a piece of legislation that needs to be enacted at all schools within the country. My second point, Chair, and I think this is to Honourable Masiko, is when we have presentations like this moving forward, I think it's very important to invite the specific department to the meeting so that of basic education must tell us why, one, the policy has not been spread out and sent to all the schools within the country, two, why has some departments been lack in submitting reports and giving information to the CGE. Whenever we have these sort of reports from the CGE, the same complaint keeps coming up. It's been 5 years. The term is almost at the end. And from the beginning till now, the same sort of issues face the CGE, lack of information, lack of responsive timing, lack of, you know, getting the information that they need to get. And as a Chapter 9 institution, and we always say this as a portfolio committee, it's unacceptable, and departments must always be held accountable, even if they don't like to be held accountable. Chair, when it comes to the NSP, I think this is my comment around the late reporting. This looks at 2021, 2022. We're now in 2024. So it makes it difficult. It speaks about the National Council of GBVF, which we've passed the legislation. So it, sometimes it feels like, you know, these reports are so delayed and, you know, we almost two steps ahead. It makes it very difficult to hold departments accountable. As you said, Chair, the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities is always a main contender in the departments who are failing the most in government. And it makes it difficult to hold them accountable with reports if we don't get them in time, or if they're not presented or tabled. Tabled is a better word, to the portfolio committee. So maybe this is just something for the CGE to look at. I want to say well done to the CGE. You have consistently provided good reports. Is it Sana that breaks down exactly what the issue is? So well done to the research department. I think keep it up. Keep doing more reports. This is your mandate. Your mandate is, one, to make policy proposals. It's also to hold government accountable as a Chapter 9 institution. So keep doing that without fear and without favor. As we continue to move forward. Chair, I will leave it for now. I have been mostly covered by other honorable members. It's very difficult to sort of get into the questions around the specifics because it's not CGE who needs to answer for that. Yeah. The only thing I can do is speak about the report CGE gave and how the methodology and the information they provide. So I do look forward, if possible, we can have a meeting with the Department of Basic Education, the Department of Health, whoever, all the other stakeholders that need to come and answer, Chairperson. 83,000 young girls falling pregnant is too high. 26% of those by older predators is too high. This is something we really need to look at before we break for term. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sharif. Over to you, CGE.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Good morning to you, Chairperson, and the members, and the CGE, and the staff. Chairperson, mine, it will be on the a teenage pregnancy of our children. Our children, Chairperson, are being affected in pregnancy in an early age in all provinces. And instead of a decrease, it's getting worse. And it is the reason and the result for them to drop out at school before time. And what is bad and worries us as parents, these guys or the boys who did this thing in our children, they are continuing to school. And these girls are delayed. So my question or my advice, why CGE not to deal or focus to teach these children about the prevention, which is contraceptive. Go back, yaqhubeka Chairperson, and we know about Italy, this thing, yabantwana bethu abakhulelwa bebancane.
Why don't terminate and abort
recommend the contraception, contraceptive, so that they continue with their education. Secondly, it's not done by the CGE. The Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities. I understand you, Chairperson.
Yes. And it's Mnango, can get and hear good health and sit at Angokon of the GE
because I can't go to the Department of Health. We're dealing with the
GE.
We are supposed to. What I'm trying to avoid. People who are listening to us, they are going to think that CGA should do health education and contraceptive or family planning things. That is why I am saying it's the responsibility of the
meeting with the Department of Health and raise that.
Yes, sure. It's not a time.
We'll call the Department of Health.
Of Health,
which
yes.
There is a need.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Chair. Can I continue?
Yes, ma.
Thank you, Chair. And again, Chair, I want to hear from CGE about their relationship between them and the police in connection with the kids at schools. Because these young boys at schools are so cruel and dangerous. In schools, they are coming with the dangerous things, and now the teachers are really afraid even to search them. I have an example in Marikana, where I'm staying, in Rashata High School. Last year, before they closed the school, it fights a day la, Patrick Pessin, Begunze Makakulu, Ababangana.
Kids were fighting each other, stabbing each other. Even the police intervened, but I don't know whether it's because they smoke drugs. I just want to know the relationship between CGE and the police. How is it? As Chairperson of the CGE, I heard you inquiring about Northern Cape, saying that there was no visibility or lack of communication. I just want to understand, is it because the Northern Cape was not in the list of the vacancies? Northern Cape was never represented. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mam Sonti. Over to you, CGE.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will let CEO and the Acting HOD of Research answer the other ones, but I just wanted to respond to the last question quickly. From my understanding of how commissioners are brought on board, it is not a provincial thing, but the organization then has the powers and responsibilities to deploy. And this has been done over the years since the inception of the CGE successfully. So it's not about whether a commissioner comes from there or not. It's basically what happens inside. And I think what has happened in terms of the breakdown also does not have anything to do with whether the commissioner is local or not. It's just something that has to do with the breakdown of relations, as I've pointed out. Thanks. CEO, over to you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. I'll start with Naledi with the technical questions relating to the studies, and then I'll wrap up in terms of the overall questions that may not necessarily be linked to the study. Naledi?
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Honourable Members, for your questions. I will tackle a few of the technical questions that were posed. I'll start with the first question on how many of our participants were pregnant due to sexual assault or rape. My response to that would be that, and I think this has already been put to the fore, that our sample size was quite limited. And this is mainly because we were using the qualitative study approach. But what has come up, even internally in the institution, as well as we've been going around the country presenting the study, and this is on the first report on adolescent pregnancies, what has come up is that as the CGE, perhaps what we also need to do is to expand on our scope. So instead of just focusing on factors that lead to school dropout, also look into who are the perpetrators or who are the fathers, and also advise on some of the interventions that are needed in that regard. What we currently have in the country are a number of studies which are good in telling us the prevalence of the situation. But on learners dropout, we don't have much. And also this is another area that has been flagged to say we also need to utilize the mixed methods approach or the quantitative approach. So not only looking into the in-depth situation or unpacking the challenges, but also the prevalence, how many. So right now I cannot give a response in terms of how many, also because the study was qualitative, we didn't really look into that. But what we do take note of is the need for us to conduct a study going forward that looks into issues of prevalence, not the prevalence of adolescent pregnancy necessarily, because we do have those the sources there, but mainly on how prevalent is this challenge of school dropout. And what we learned is that even the department doesn't make those figures publicly available. What we struggled, what we referred to our participants as a hard-to-reach sample, because it is difficult. We know that they exist, but in terms of where, it is not documented. So we would like to expand on the study going forward, and perhaps to then address issues also around who the perpetrators or the fathers are, including covering issues of sexual abuse and rape. Our sample was quite limited. It was informed by the phenomenological research approach. I think firstly what we wanted to do was to have an in-depth understanding of the challenges before going into the prevalence and looking into big numbers. Because what quantitative researchers can tell us most of the time is how widespread is the situation, but hardly how detailed, how bad is the situation. And that's what our study tried to do. The phenomenological research approach advocates for about at least between 5 and 25 participants. And this is because, like I said, the focus is not on the numbers or how big the situation is. It's mainly on the in-depth analysis of the challenge. And that's what we try to do. But going forward, honorable members, we do see a need as the CGE to expand on the scope of the study. A lot of dynamics are at play, and a lot of these have come to us, like I said, as we go around the country speaking on the findings of the study. So it was quite limited. We did focus on the three provinces over the 12-month cycle. And this was because of how our APP is designed. It does tend to limit our scope because at the end of every financial year, we have to produce the report. So we also have to be practical around how much of the elephant we can chew. But we also wanted to sample. And what we've seen happen is that there's transferability taking place of our findings. I think 2 weeks ago, we were presenting at the Mpumalanga Provincial, it was the provincial, it was a provincial forum. And what they said was they found value in these studies because of how we were able to clearly define the scope of our study, as well as give background information around where it was conducted and how. So what we found is that they're able to see the value of the findings in their own context, but also asking that we cover their own provinces because of obviously the detailed in-depth situation that they would have, unique circumstances of that province. So what we see is that there is that possibility for transferability of the findings of the study, which means the findings of the study that was done in the three provinces can be utilized in other contexts, even though it was not conducted there. But there's still a need, because we do see that even in our report, there are quite dynamic issues. Every province had its own unique challenges that needed to be brought to under the spotlight. And on the recommendation regarding the presence of social workers in the school, that is correct, Honorable Chairperson. I think we did not even say the presence of social workers, but rather covered that under the need for psychosocial support, just to align ourselves with what the policy prescripts say. But this need has been realized over some years now. I think it's even covered in the NSP, and it's one of the areas where there wasn't, you know, much progress reported, that there is a need for the presence of social workers in the schools. I think the challenge we have generally as a country is on the shortage of social workers. But there's a clear need for their services, specifically in the schools. So I do agree, Honorable Chair, that there is a need to probably amplify that recommendation and not just say psychological or psychosocial support, but be clear and say social workers, because they are responsible for providing that kind of service. I will then hand over to the CEO to cover the rest of the questions. Thank you, CEO. Acting CEO.
Yes, thank you so much, Naledi and honorable members. So I will start with the chair of the committee regarding the sharing of our report and engaging with key stakeholders that are implemented, or rather implicated in the report. Chairperson, we had the opportunity to present the report, particularly on teenage pregnancy, with the Portfolio Committee of Basic Education as well. And in that engagement, what also came out was a progress report that was prepared by the department itself. And I think that's one of the things that we need to just get from them. But the report details step by step in terms of the issues that the CGS raised and what is it that they have done until this point. What is needed perhaps is just feedback from them so that we can have it for our records. But I'm aware that they had prepared something to respond to the recommendations and findings that we have made as the CGE. Then we have also held various policy dialogues and stakeholder engagements similar to the one that Naledi is referring to in Mpumalanga.
CEO?
Yes, Chairperson.
The Department of Basic Education, you didn't give them a time frame on when should they submit that report.
No, Chairperson, we did not give time frames because the progress report was already presented at that forum, and we just need to follow up now to say, can they please provide it to us? But initially, we had not given them time frames, and I think it's an error on our side, Chairperson.
Yeah, because now they can take time, you know. They can give you next year because they didn't give them a time frame. So next time when you have meetings with the whatever stakeholder, ne? Make sure that you give them time frames.
I've noted that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay.
And then there were questions around how many sexual abuse cases and rape matters. Chairperson, in my opening, I did say that there is a criteria that we have used for this study. And that criteria was much clear in terms of the exclusion of certain persons there. And we did say that the adolescents, particularly those that experienced sexual abuse, were not part of the study. And we did that, Chairperson, because we understood that when it comes to sexual abuse and rape matters, it may not be easy to engage with the parties, either because the matters are currently pending before another forum, or it may just subject them to secondary victimization by merely talking about the incident itself. So it's from that premise that we thought it may not be prudent of us to engage those that were subjected to rape and sexual abuse. But of course, Chairperson, it's an issue that we need to confront as a country, because the reality is that there are those that dropped out because, or even fell pregnant because this is rape. If you look at the fact that we're dealing with children who are below, I mean, from the age of 10 going forward. So of course we're talking about statutory rape. But for the purpose of this study, it's not something that we had considered with the challenges that we saw with this. And there are questions, Chairperson, that we have also not engaged relating to the study as far as transactional issues are concerned, issues around sugar daddies and so forth. These were not part of the study for this. But we, of course, as I've said, there are these areas that honorable members are raising that are legitimate. Unfortunately, for the purposes of this, this is not a criteria that we use today. In terms of who's reporting, the schools should report to the South African Police Service as it is covered under their national policy that is now in effect from 2022, so that they bear the responsibility. But Chairperson, we have a challenge that we have observed in observing or doing our court monitoring, because associated with this question is about the court monitoring and how certain matters are handled before the court. And this is where, Chairperson, the CGE has the mandate. So in terms of discharging this mandate, we have identified a variety of issues there that are actually linked also to the NSP in terms of justice and protection. We have observed, for example, Chairperson, that, for example, in the KZN province, we had a matter wherein a presiding officer passed on. There was a docket that was also missing. And we had to engage as the province under the leadership of Commissioner Naidi to say that the docket must be reconstructed. The docket must be reconstructed so that the matter can be re-enrolled there. The provincial manager as well was very much critical in those engagements so that the matter can be restored. So those are the things that as the CGE, we are responsible for. And we can actually account to say, in as far as this matter, this is what we have done and the challenges related thereto. But we do know that responsibility, that largely the schools bear the responsibility to report, and the IOs must be the ones that do the investigation. The cardinal question, Chairperson, is are we having an unimpeachable investigating officers? Because our view is that when it comes to sexual abuse or rape matters, you cannot allocate a constable to investigate. You need somebody at the higher level, be it a sergeant who is more experienced and having knowledge around sexual abuse and so forth. So that is an area that we did say to SAPS, they must look into so that we don't have junior officials or investigating officers in critical matters such as sexual abuse or rape. There was a question, Chairperson, around the, I think it's Honorable Masip, around the curriculum of the basic education. Chairperson, one of the things that we have picked up in our engagement is precisely around the challenges with the curriculum. There's something in the curriculum that they are teaching, I think, from grade 10, that is called gender harm violence. And we are saying as the CGE, we need to demystify some of the terminologies that are used in our curriculum so that there can be a clear understanding of what is it that we want to teach and convey to society. So gender harm violence, it was not really clear as to what is it that it wants to achieve and where does this terminology even emanate from. Is it aiming to emphasize on the gender-based violence and femicide issues? And how is it different from the concept that we are all familiar with? So, of course, what it then says is that we need to then zoom into the curriculum, amongst others, to determine what is it that is contained in there, and then what is it that it wants to achieve over and above that. So I agree, Chairperson, on a question around accountability for those who impregnate learners. We agree there. And this is where we are saying matters must be reported by the schools to the relevant authorities being served. There was a challenge that we have seen quite recently, both in Gauteng and at Limpopo, where in some of the schools, and if I'm not mistaken, even Eastern Cape, wherein there was a request from some of our schools that if a learner is coming to school being pregnant, they must be accompanied by a parent. And if you come there without a parent, you are not allowed admission into the school. And we found that conduct to be discriminating in a way. And then we had to intervene as the CGE. However, we are unable to respond positively in terms of who is actually impregnating these learners. It's a study that we have not conducted. But what we understand is it is common cause that those who do this, of course, they have committed statutory rape. And should we know their whereabouts, we do encourage those are the victims of abuse to report them to the South African Police Service. And what we then do is to conduct the monitoring. We monitor the case, Chairperson, from a pre-trial stage, during trial, and post-trial as well, so that we can look at certain factors that are often neglected in the justice system, be it evidence being overlooked, be it gender insensitive remarks, be it lenient sentences that do not serve as a deterrent. Those are the areas that we focus on to ensure that there is accountability as the CGE in the justice system. There was a question, Chairperson, around, I think this I'll skip because I don't think it's for the CGE, which the Chairperson has clearly outlined, around the CGE teaching learners around contraceptives. What we can, however, say we can do is to have that high-level engagement with the Department of Education and recommend that some of the things or the challenges that they are experiencing can be dealt with through these awareness sessions, which they must take responsibility to roll out across provinces. Similarly, on the issues of advising teachers, Chairperson, I think it's something that the department, through the policy that is now in place, they are currently going to be implemented. Mm. There was a question around, I think I'll skip this one because my lady spoke about it, of the need to have social workers. I think that is covered. But what is currently happening, Chairperson, is that there's a need also to have midwives in schools because social workers themselves are not trained to deal with pregnancy. So from that angle alone, we may look at social workers, we must look at also the midwives that are needed there.
100% correct.
There was a question, Chairperson, I think on this, so I'll skip this one, Honorable Sharif. Suffice to say, Chair, we acknowledge on our side we didn't provide a feedback or rather a timeline in terms of implementation of the recommendations. We'll do that immediately after this meeting so that we can have that report. But because I sat in that meeting and I've listened to the presentation by the department and the DG in particular, I know the report is there. So we just have to ask for it so that they can start in. Chairperson, I think, okay, then there's a question around the relationship between SAPS and the CGE in as far as violence in schools is concerned. I think from our responsibility, one of the things that are coming out of the CGE's Act is that we must have relationship with like-minded institutions. But as the CGE, we must also guard against entering into memorandum of understanding with institutions that we are expected to conduct oversight over. So SAPS is a critical stakeholder. It advances our mandate in a way in protecting and providing safety. But we are careful not to enter into a formal relationship wherein we are not able at the end of the day to conduct oversight over. As it is now, we are currently visiting different substations through the commissioners to determine issues around gender-based violence, TCCs, amongst others. So we are currently looking into that. But where we find that there are police officers that are found wanting in terms of behavior or failing to do certain investigations, we then call the necessary provincial head to come and explain to us regarding that. Now, in as far as the violence is concerned, it's not something that we have specifically said we have engaged SAPS so that they can deal with violence in schools. But where we have picked up violence in schools that is gender related, we are able to now engage the Department of Basic Education, engage SAPS, and then also the monitor the specific courts and specific cases that are undergoing through the court system. I think broadly, Chairperson, I'm not sure if I missed any question, but this is how I would like to then submit our answering to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Any addition from the side of commissioners? Chairperson?
From our side, all the questions have been answered, Chair. Thank you.
Any follow-up question from honourable members?
Chair.
Ma'am?
Andimbo no mam kaula and as no network in Uncle Sam.
I don't see next mam kaula.
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
Or let me call her. Maybe
okay,
she something.
Okay, Mam Santi.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much, honorable members. If there are no further questions, then Nelly, this was the last report, or there's another report?
It's the last report, Chair, from the CGE.
There are no reports from CGE that are outstanding.
There are, Chair. I think we have about three. I'll just double check the number. Yes.
Is it done, Anton?
Are you talking about there?
I will have to go back to my list. I will have to go back to my list to check and check which one are outstanding that we have not dealt with.
Okay. Okay. Hello?
Chair, I don't see where I should raise my hand. I don't know. I think that tenor has disappeared. I just wanted to inform the committee that this actually will be the last appearance of Commissioner Ohara Ngoma Diseko as her contract is coming to an end on the 31st of March. So I just wanted to announce formally that. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, contract pela end of March.
Yes.
Okay. Honorable Sheriff.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, please call me out of order if I am. I just wanted to get an update on while we have the CGE here, on the Commissioner's Handbook. What is the progress? Has it been adopted? Can we have a copy of it? Can we maybe get a young presentation around it just so that we know what's happening there? Secondly, Chair, in terms of those commissioners that are leaving, in the beginning of the meeting, we did ask that we know where all the commissioners are allocated to. Maybe if we can just get a list, and for those commissioners whose term is coming to an end, if the CG can just provide us with who the backup, I think they called it backup commissioners, are, in case we might need assistance while the commissioners who have terms have come to an end are gone. Thank you, Chair.
No, you're not out of order. In fact, they need to respond.
Thank you for the question, Honourable. The handbook is done and dusted. We adopted it at the plenary of the 11th of December, 2023. So it actually is in place now. Not only did we do the handbook, we also have got something on internal and external protocols just to minimize some of the challenges that we experience internally and outside when we have events and the relations between commissioners and staff. So that it's those are some of the things that we're doing. Why we actually delayed in disseminating the document is that we wanted to formally launch it. You are all invited and you are updating the list of invitees. So that's when we thought we will distribute to our stakeholders a copy, a formal copy. It's going to be presented, printed and packaged properly with the CGE branding. That is why there was a delay, but it's in force now. It has been adopted on the 11th of December, 2023. Thanks.
Okay.
The team of commissioners will definitely follow with the report.
Yeah, Mam O'Hara must submit her report before. Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Member. I think we have come to the end of our meeting. Thank you very much, Chairperson, Commissioners, and Acting CEO. Thank you for the work that you have done so far and the response that you have given to the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much. And continue doing the good work. Your research team, at least what is important for us is for them to go out there, do their own research and not take research that was commissioned by some people that we don't even know and then and present them as if it's your work. So what is important to us is that your researchers, they are presenting work that has been done by them. So when it's work done by yourself, it's easy to respond to questions to the portfolio committee and improve where there's gaps. So I think next time when in the next term, in the seventh administration, the reports that you will present for sure, you'll add and improve on the things that you have raised in the meeting. But thank you very much, because it's not the last meeting that we will be having with yourself. We'll look at our timetable before the 28th of March, on which date are we going to fit you in? Because now we are going to be busy with the interviews. I'm sure next week we'll be busy with the interviews for 3 days, if I'm not mistaken. And then for sure around the 20-something, we'll invite you to a meeting. It might be even Friday evening. Friday evening next week, or for you to come and present the last report. So, honorable members, I'm trying to prepare you so that you can avail yourself on the a meeting that will be on a Friday afternoon or evening, and that will be the last meeting with yourselves as the CGE. So that will mean we'll have a meeting where commissioners will present their quarterly reports on the work that you have done so far, and then the three outstanding reports. So it's four reports that you'll be presenting. But thank you very much, honorable members. I think we have come to the end of the meeting. If there's no announcement or any other matter that Nelly, we have put in the agenda. Nelly, sir?
Chair, there is. It's minutes.
Oh, okay. Okay, CGE, you can leave our meeting. Thank you very much. Have a good day to you.
Thank you, Chair. Bye, Chairperson. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye. Nelly, faka ma minutes. Ama minutes ama set engeki.
Yo, it's about 7 sets, Chair.
Why is not 7?
It's 4. It's from last year, Chair, when we're dealing with the NYDA amendment bill. And then E3, it's for this time, the 2.
NYDA amendment bill, so you have adopted those minutes. Didn't we?
No, Chair. Our last meeting was on the 7th of December, Chair.
Oh, of our meeting like we held in December, last week of November, and in the first week of December.
Yes, Chair.
Okay.
I'm sharing the first one, the 21st.
Okay. Okay. All right.
21st February, Chair.
CGE, yo, CGE. Remember, in case there, I'm calling it. We'll have from the Zoom for 30 minutes. 30 minutes.
Chair, we can use this once we're done with our minute.
Okay.
Or we can
let me tell them to wait. Keep on up.
Yeah.
Chair, tell them to wait again. So that the last item may Tushayasiphazamisa emithini yethu.
Can I call Umam Khawula or is she here? I'm not sure if
where is she?
I'll check her, Chair.
Mangekho sendlula kuyo asiqhubekeni ngama minutes.
Chair, can I suggest that we maybe deal with that before we go into the minutes? So then when we release the CGE, they can leave and then we can focus on the minute?
Yeah, fine. Let's start with that case, Kamam Kaulu. Where is she? I'm going to see this card. Mam Sondi?
Chair. Sorry, Chair. I've just called her now. She's going to log in again.
Daughter. Number 18, I'm Zama. Thank you.
All right. Mam Khawula beka phumela ne meeting.
She's joining now, Chair. Not sure what happened. She's in. Chair, Mam Khawula, Honorable Khawula is in the meeting, Chair.
Mam Kaula, the platform is yours. Can you share your story? Honorable Kaula. Nelly.
Hello, sir.
Why Mam Kaula ngakhulumi? Mabi platform yakhe.
I'm not sure, sir. I'm checking, but she's here.
Phela isikhathi siyadleka, ngizoyikhatha phela mina le case.
Okay, Chayton, let me check a foot.
Apologies for this. There's a lot of noise around me. I'm checking the better place to sit on. It's very noisy where I am. Still trying to get a better place. Position. It's better where I am now.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, Chair.
I have a problem, Chairperson. All my cases I've been referring to concerning abuse. Audible.
Jesus Christ.
My goodness.
Okay, Kevin, I'm going to imagine. Hello?
Am I audible, Chairperson?
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. No, Chair. Lana, ngithankolise. First number, I want to interrupt.
Apologies, Chairperson. And I'm sorry to interrupt you previously. It's because of the problem that I'm facing, and I've sent you photos. All the cases I was referring to concerning the abuse in the farm dwellers and the eviction of people being evicted by the police
as in previous era of apartheid. It's affecting me so much because the deputy minister for human settlement
Phoenix
knows this case in of Phoenix, CGE in Durban, they know this matter. Even the legal advisor for Department of Justice, they know this issue, but nothing has been done to protect these people until today, as they are being evicted so brutally and cruelly by all the police. What is very saddening, I'm seeing children being evicted, things that were happening to us in Guamashu during apartheid time, if we, our parents have failed to pay the rent. To me, it appears as if there's no freedom whatsoever. Because we speak to these people, but they don't do their job. As I have sent you the numbers of the farms, like in Dundee, we went there with CGA people, we saw the disabled people which were brutally injured by white farmers and the kids that died through the poisoning. All those cases are just lying unattended. This case is saddening me so much because we experience this. We fought, we struggled and fought for this in the 80s, hoping that by the time we get the freedom, we won't suffer like this. And what is annoying me and disgusting, I was traveling with the CGE members, but these cases are just under stagnation. Nothing is happening. It's very, very painful to me. I've been sending these photos to you. I feel very sad, and I'm feeling very furious because there's no need for us to be called honorable people because we're doing nothing for the people. So I'm totally hurt psychologically. I even gave you the numbers of Lawrence Park, who was evicted by the deputy the minister of justice. This is very painful to perceive.
The case.
I wanted to understand this case as to what is it about and who is evicting who, where.
Thank you,
Chairperson. It's in Phoenix, Chairperson, in U20. This family has been there for more than 23 years. There was a time. There was a fight in 1949. I was not even born. And the other fight was there, or the war. I was born by then. Indians were evicted who were staying with the black people in Smangweni and other areas. And all those Indians were given the land in Phoenix. It was just a plain land there. Others settled there. And the family I'm referring to that is being evicted today, it's the family that has been staying for a long time. They were given by somebody to stay there. But somebody is coming out saying that it's her or his land. I went to Berlin and the person in charge there, they said that the Muslims usually come and
build that house.
And if they find that you don't have the title deed, they just do fraudulent things by changing the particulars of the title deed.
Deputy Chair,
did they build the house themselves?
Yes. I just want to deal with this case separately with Mam Kaula. Chairperson? People who are problematic are high courts. They are just robbing us. High courts are very problematic, and the magistrates and the police are being used to do fraudulent things, evicting people without any reason. I'll send this case to the CGE so that they deal with it once and for all. The family is just loitering outside. They were just throwing the kids outside, exactly like in the apartheid time. I wish that you knew the apartheid times. We were being abused. Even our relatives, they don't know where they were buried. The Black Jacks came and just evicted everybody from the house. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Makaula. Nelly, put the minute. Nelly, where are the minutes?
I'm sharing the minutes of the 21st of November, Chair.
Honorable members, here are the minutes of the 21st November 2023. It's where we're dealing with clause by clause deliberations on the NYTA amendment bill number 13, 2022. Go down. Mangani. Okay, go down. I take it that honorable members, we have read this minutes. Any corrections? If there are no corrections, can I get a mover for the...
Honorable Chair, Honorable Masiko, sorry, I was trying to put my hand up.
Okay, Masiko.
If we can just go back to the point on adoption of minutes.
Mam Kaula.
Sir, my love.
What any mic here, Mam Kaula?
Please. Close.
I'm happy. Bye.
Okay. Can I get a move? So
we are
moving,
Master. Yes, Che, I'd like to move for the adoption of the minutes as presented. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, as a true reflection of what transpired in the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Masigo. Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to second.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masondo and Honorable Masigo. The minutes of the 21st of November 2023 have been duly adopted. Next minute. minutes of the 23rd November 2023. Our consideration of the our report on the amendment of the NYDA amendment bill. Bill number 13, 2022. Oh, okay. Okay, can I get a mover for the adoption of this minute? Thank you. Honorable Piri, are you moving for the adoption of the minutes?
Yes, Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Piri. Ma'am Kaula, are you seconding?
Chair?
Are you seconding adoption of the minutes?
Yes, Chair, I do second.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Thank you, Honorable Members. The minutes of the 22nd of November 2023 have been duly adopted. Next set of minutes. Minutes of the 28th of November 2023, consideration and adoption of the A list and the B list on the amendment bill of NYDA 20, bill number B13, 2022. I think when the correction, the chairperson was concerned that there are more cases. Yeah. Can I get a mover for the adoption of this minute?
Yeah, move to adopt the minute.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sheriff. For adoption of this minute, Honorable Tembani.
I second the adoption of the minute, Chair and Repeater.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tembani, for the secondment of the minutes of the 28th November 2023. These minutes have been duly adopted. The next set of minutes. Minutes of 7 December 2023. We were considering the adoption of committee program for the filling of vacancies. for CGE? Oh, I'm Benet. Can I get a mover for the adoption of this minute?
Honorable Vasigo Chair, I move for the adoption of the minute as a true reflection of what transpired in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I second the mover of the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. The minutes of the 7th of December 2022 have been duly adopted. The next set of minutes. February 2024. Presentation of IOISD legal advisor on criteria for shortlisting. Amber Pan. I'm moving so fast because I take it that honorable members have read the minutes.
Chair, I will move to adopt the minutes.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable chair. Can I get a second?
Chair, before I second, I have a question. The shortlisting process took place over a period of 2 days. Does it mean that on the second day of the shortlisting, there are going to be different minutes from what we have here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I then second, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. These minutes have been duly adopted. Let's get the next set of minutes where it was the continuation. Yes, short mistake. Lankala watch 20, ne? Lanka 21. And it's net.
Yes, Chair, that's when we committee shortlisted 20 candidates, Chair. I'll just go at the bottom of the names.
Okay. Hamb. Biela Pezul. Can I get a mover for the adoption of this minute?
And Richard.
Right. Oh,
Chair, I move.
Thank you very much, Mam Sonti. Honorable, for moving for adoption of this minute. Honorable Tembani.
I second the adoption of the minutes, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tembani. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. These minutes of the 21st of February 2024 have been duly adopted. The next set of minutes, CGE.
Yes, Chair.
27 February 2024. We were getting a briefing from CGE. On report on the state of shelters. Okay. Yeah, Pants Nelly. imakancane majahi kakhulu ibuyela phezulu kancane khona into engifuna uyibona Neli iyaphansi
yes sir
iyaphansi ngifuna undlule kuma-observation uye kuma-metals patterning oyimalapho ke
okay
okay all right go down okay okay can I get a mover for the adoption of this minute Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I move the adoption of the minutes as true reflection what transpired in the last meeting.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masondo. Honorable Piri.
I second the adoption.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable Piri, for the adoption of, for the secondment of the minutes of the 28th, let me see, 28th or 27th February 2024 has been duly adopted. I think we're done with the minutes, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, Chair, we're done.
Yeah. It's now, ukhuluma ngathi ama minutes wa last year. Yo, kanti ukhuluma ngama minutes amanye wa this year. Thank you very much, honorable members. We have come to the end of our meeting. We'll meet next week. Can you see?
Yes, Chair. Next week on Tuesday, we have invited the Department of Women, Chair, on first, second, and third quarterly report on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, 13 and 14, we conduct interviews, Chair.
Okay. So Tuesday will be visual, and then for will be physical for our interviews.
Yes, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Chair, on the side, I wish to ask if the interviews will be the whole day. Have we been granted? Because I think next week we are also having questions to the minister on Wednesday.
Have
you checked?
Yes, I've checked. I've submitted an application through to the House Chairperson's office and the Chief Whip for permission for the committee to conduct interviews. I'm still waiting, Chair. I'll make a follow-up again today.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking, how are we going to deal with that matter? Because I'm sure for this portfolio committee, most honorable members have questions to the minister, as well as follow-up questions. Angaz, Chair, can we look into it?
Yeah, ne?
Chair?
Yebo?
Chair? Ngizocela sibheke because on Wednesday it's question day for cluster 3, which is e-governance. And minister will be there answering questions. There are a couple of questions. So I'm looking at the question paper where all of us, in fact, most of us will be asking questions to the minister.
Okay. We'll look at that.
Okay. All right.
Ubani obunye bekakhuluma?
No, bekuyimina nje Chairperson on that one nje alone.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much, honorable members. We have come to the end of our meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye.